So the question was asked about the institutions of the men of the Great Assembly, and the truth is this is the ideal time to discuss this, because the men of the Great Assembly is really the period of Purim. So in order to understand, let's take a few examples. The men of the Great Assembly, they organized Judaism the way we know it today. So before the men of the Great Assembly, you'd want to eat a chocolate bar. So what would you say? Whatever you wanted. Blessed are you, Hashem, thanks for the great chocolate bar. Eat the chocolate bar. The guy next to you made a shahakal on everything he ate under the sun. You wanted to daven to Hashem, what would you say in the morning? You get up and say, oh, what a good sleep. Thank you, Hashem, who created the whole world. What a good sleep you gave me. Please help me today. Blessed be Hashem. Okay, so you gave praise. You gave a request. Thanks. You gave praise again. You did your davening. Think about what religion looked like. Came Shabbos, you were walking around with your pen in your pocket. No muktzah. Right? They instituted muktzah. So you're walking around Shabbos with your pen in your pocket. Your kids are playing with a plow on Shabbos. You could lean on your cow on Shabbos. So many things that the men of the... Money in your pocket. I won't do business, but I have my wallet on me. Could you imagine what a Shabbos like that looks like?
Awesome?
I don't think so.
Was it that people were becoming more amoratzim as time was going on, or there was just this assembling of the whole service in the temple?
Along come the men of the great assembly, Ezra, Sofer, and sees that when the temple was destroyed, Am Yisrael thought their connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam was through the temple. We find in the Navi Yechezkel that when the temple was destroyed, the people thought, that's it, we're no longer the chosen people. And the greatness of the institutions of the men of the great assembly was on many levels. One level, every Jew davens at home. Suddenly the temple is no longer center stage. We value the temple, we bring sacrifices, but every Jew has his connection three times a day with Hashem from his own home, from his own Beit Knesset, from his own shul. So, you have that, you understand people weren't going off to idol worship anymore. And when the second temple was destroyed, you don't have people questioning, well, are we still the chosen people? Because their connection to Hashem was on a totally different level.
Partially abandoned the Jewish people because we didn't have the Aron HaKodesh in the second temple. You know, we didn't have it in there in the second temple. So that it's like we descended down spiritually. All right, so that these new laws were created in hopes of making us ascend to the way we were back in days of Shulchan Aruch.
I hear. I think there's some truth to what you're saying, meaning you definitely find the people were intermarrying. So Ezra Sofer comes and says, no more intermarriage. So he has a powerful police force, and he forces them to get divorced. And then Ezra Sofer sees they're doing business on Shabbos, and Ezra has to contend with that. So they make institutions that not only organize Judaism, now everyone knows what they're davening three times a day, they also make institutions to ensure that we won't fall again. So they institute muktzeh. The people are so into carrying their wallets and stuff on them that initially when they institute muktzeh, they say no using forks on Shabbos. No using any tools on Shabbos. They came and began by making everything prohibited. Then they saw people registered, so they said, okay, you could use your forks on Shabbos, but you can't use your pitchfork on Shabbos. But they moved. They shifted all of Judaism. They advanced all of Judaism. Well, Judaism, the way we know it today, is thanks to them. And here we have a tremendous shift, meaning if you have the Talmud divides world history into sets of 2,000 years. You have 2,000 years Tohu, and 2,000 years Torah, and then 2,000 years Yemos Mashiach. The men of the Great Assembly brought to the forefront the appreciation of Torah Shebaal Peh. The idea that you can't have Torah without a tradition, you can't have Torah without a rabbi, suddenly you have a totally different Torah. And part of that was the story of Esther. Because the people left to their own whims were ready to go to that party. The people left to their own whims were ready to bow to Haman. Along come Mordechai and Esther and they say no. And they show them that no, if not for Mordechai and Esther, there'd be nothing left. And the people walk away from Purim with a totally different appreciation, and we enter a whole new period in Jewish history. Chazal tell us, now the people were willing to accept the oral law. And so we enter a period of Torah Shebaal Peh. The period of Bayis Sheni is a period where Torah Shebaal Peh reigns. That's the period of the development of the oral law. The development in the sense that the rabbis made institutions like they never had before. So Shmoneh Esrei we might have had from Moshe Rabbeinu's time to Machlokas Rishonim. But there were many other institutions, and the institutions are what saved us. That's what kept Judaism what it is today. So it was necessary, but the nation was now ready to accept it. We had descended, like Baruch correctly said. We were not on the level we were at earlier, but we were also prepared to accept it. I don't think so.
What?
I don't think so.
Why not? If we're such a high level, right? That we didn't need to differentiate between Dhamma and Hadates. We need to differentiate between those because that our connection was so much stronger in those days, right? Is that
so? I don't think that's the case.
Really?
I think the people knew it. The learned people knew it and did it in their own words.
So the rest of Jewish people who were not the Hakamim, you know?
Also, the Talmud tells us that there were generations where the masses were Talmidei Chachamim. In David's days, in Yoshio's days, in Chizkiyo's days, you do have periods where the education was the way it should be, where even the smallest child knew all the details of the halachos. So it's not so accurate to say 99% of the people didn't know. No, there were times when 99% of the people did know, and then there were also problematic times. You're right.
So how did we go from times where 99% of people did know to where more than 99% of people did not know?
I'm unaware of a time where more than 99% of the people did not know.
Well,
Did you read it? You're quoting something.
Yeah,
did
I'm
you read
quoting,
it?
I'm not quoting it, right? But also in the Nehemiah, right? And Nehemiah, it talks about how Ezra has sofer, all right? Ezra instituted Pesach.
Slowly. Let's take one claim at a time. The first claim you said, if you open up the Tanakh, I think that's not what it says. It says that they brought a Sefer Torah, and they said the Sefer Torah was found in the temple. Which researchers like to interpret to mean that that was the only Sefer Torah of the time. That's not the tradition we have in how that Pasuk is to be understood. And that's not what the Pasuk literally says. The Pasuk says they found the Sefer Torah, and they brought it. Our tradition is that that was a unique Sefer Torah because that was the Sefer Torah written by Moshe Rabbeinu and it was found in a unique way, and so that's why they brought it to you. You're saying an interpretation that I know researchers like to say, but if you look in the verse itself, that's why I asked you, if you saw the verse doesn't say that. The verse just says they were impressed, they found the Sefer Torah, they brought it before the king. That's all. So before we assume that interpretation, you should just be aware our tradition is different. And the verse is not exactly supportive of that interpretation of the verse. So that's number one. As far as the story in Ezra, again, open up the verse, see the words, and then tell me if you still believe that interpretation of the verse. I hear the claim, look at the verse, see the context, and if you still feel that way, we'll talk. Okay? No problem. When you see it, then we'll see if you still have a question.
What was the issue with leadership? Meaning you had Baruch Benere, you have the whole people that led up until Ezra at the time. So are we saying that there was void of any proper leadership?
No. Okay. There was leadership, but they weren't listening.
They they just weren't listening. So Ezra had was such a great darshan. He had such a great influence on them that even his teacher Baruch Benaria,
Ezra had a police force. Ezra was the boss. The king gave him rule. Ezra with Nehemiah, with Zerubbabel, Ezra could do it. Baruch Ben Arya couldn't do it. Yirmiyah couldn't do it. When Yirmiyah tried talking, they threw him into a tar pit. Baruch Ben Arya was exiled with everyone. What could he do? Yechezkel comes and they bow to their idols in front of his face. What could he do? Yirmiyah, they tried to poison him to death. So Yeshayahu, they actually did murder. What do you want from them? Yoel, they told him, you stutter. Who do you think you are, Yoel?
It's only the coercion
that's not what I said. I said it began with the realization of the story of Esther. Chazal tell us that Gdolna Hasarat Tabat, the removal of the ring by Achashverosh, was more powerful than all the prophets. You see, none of them could move Am Yisrael, but when Achashverosh removes his ring and says, kill him, so then everyone does tshuva. And that massive tshuva is what brought us forward to the point where we suddenly realize, hey, I need the rabbi, I need the oral law, I need the tradition. So that moved us forward. That, coupled with the idea that Ezra had a police force and could institutionalize what he saw fit, that's what led us forward.
And things moved semi-smoothly afterwards?
What?
Did things move semi-smoothly? I'm saying things moved into a...
No. You still had cults. You still had the Kutim, you had the Shomronim, you had the Tzedukim, you had the Baitusim. Every generation, the Karoim...
They became minorities, though, at this point.
Oh, no. There were times when they were the majority. The Sadducees had periods where they were flourishing, and you always had the people who wanted to challenge, and every generation. So Ezra had to deal with the Kutim, and three generations later you already have the development of the two sects, Sadducees and Baitusees, and then you have the Karaites. Until today you have the Karaites and Reform and Conservative. Yeah, every generation has their group of people. No, it was never smooth sailing. There was always a challenge. Moshe Rabbeinu had his Korach. There was always a challenge. Yeah.
The best time that in Jewish history